You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we talk to House Speaker Paul Ryan about his primary re-election campaign and more. First, we Americans are having some trouble with financial literacy, according to yet another recent survey. The National Financial Capability Study finds that over two-thirds of Americans couldn't pass a basic test on financial literacy, raising questions about our ability to manage our finances and prepare for retirement or a financial emergency. J. Michael Collins joins us now. He's an associate professor of public affairs and consumer science at UW-Madison, where he directs the Center for Financial Security. He's the editor of the book, A Fragile Balance, Emergency Savings and Liquid Resources for Low-Income Consumers. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the story that survey is telling. Do we really have this problem with financial literacy in the U.S.?
Well, we've done surveys of measured financial literacy. And generally, when I say that, generally I'm talking about a quiz, you know, a quiz of sometimes true and false, sometimes, you know, what's riskier, a stock or a bond, those kinds of questions. And people for a long time have done poorly on these. And so the most recent data is consistent with the prior data, which is a lot of people struggle with those kinds of questions.
How do we do here in Wisconsin?
Well, it's interesting. Here in Wisconsin, so the survey you're mentioning did a subsample of Wisconsin the last three times they've done it, so 2009, 2012, and then this year. And you know, people in Wisconsin, when you ask them how much you know about their finances, they're sort of humble and they say, I don't know very much about my finances. And so they actually say they're worse than the average respondent in the survey. But when we ask them the quiz questions, they do better. So people in Wisconsin, for every question, they tend to be more likely to get the question right and they get more questions right on average. So we're a humble yet slightly more financially literate group here in Wisconsin.
Well, excellent. So what is financial literacy? What are the basics that we hope people know?
So the questions that we tend to put in these kinds of surveys are somewhat numerical. So there are things like, can you calculate a compound interest? You know, the idea that if I save in an account and that has an interest, then the next year I get interest on the interest and that compounds each period. So a lot of people neglect that and they forget about compound interest. So that's a common question. Another one's about inflation. You know, the fact that if there's inflation in the world, then the same dollar today won't buy the same kind of stuff several years from now. Other questions are more technical. So they're things, you know, about what happens to bond prices when interest rates go up. As you can imagine, a lot of people get that one wrong.
That's more like economics than what I think of as financial literacy.
Yeah, and it gets into finance. And, you know, there's very few people who are that active in the bond market that they think about these things that often. So, you know, there is a debate about whether some of these questions are relevant for normal people.
Well, on a practical level, for those normal people, what are some things people can do to start getting their head around their household economy?
Yeah, and I think that's really what the message of all this is that we all just need to pay more attention. And it doesn't matter if you scored all, you know, perfectly on the quiz and got every question right or you got them all wrong. I think the key is to pay attention. And, you know, I always say to when people say what can we do to improve financial literacy or to improve people's financial capability. And the first thing is just pay attention, you know, to know how much is going out every month, know how much is coming in every month, and maybe sometimes be able to catch up on some bills or even save.
There may be a reluctance, maybe even a fear for a variety of reasons, right? People don't like the math or they're worried about what they're going to see. So out of sight, out of mind. How do people, this is maybe more of a psychology question, how do people overcome that to take that first step?
It's very true that one of the resistance to financial issues is it's dollar signs and it's money and it's math. And so people have been sort of trained to shy away. Some people have been at least trained to shy away from those kinds of topics. And, you know, it's not really about math. It's about choices. It's about, you know, how much is coming in and how much of that do you want to spend on food versus housing versus other kinds of things? And, you know, how much do you want to put away for the future? And so I think, you know, when we talk to people about financial issues, we make it about life. We make it about the kinds of choices that they want to make and the kinds of future that they want to have and really put the financial choices in that context.
Talking to J. Michael Collins from UW-Madison about financial literacy and how to get started on getting a grasp on our household finances. So since it's about life, is the first step, maybe the first step isn't income and output, but goal setting.
It really is. That's exactly how the best programs start, is to start with what's important to you and what are your goals, and then how do we get there? You know, if I walk into a class and the first thing we do is start to do a budget, people start to glass over and say, forget it. I don't want to be told how to spend my money. But if the budget is a means to an end, which is the goal, then you're much more likely to want to go after that. And so it really is about goals and values. And, you know, you and I may have very different goals. So you may actually, your goal may be best achieved by borrowing more, and my goal may be just best achieved by savings and paying down debt. And, you know, each person's going to be different in that regard.
At some point, though, I guess we have to start paying attention to numbers. What is a good way for someone maybe new to doing things like this to try to do that eye glazing budget, just try to start seeing, okay, what's coming in, what's it going for?
Yeah, I think it depends for different people. There's different first steps, but I mean, one is to, you know, every month you either in your email or on your app or maybe in the mail you get your bills and just put them together. Take the last couple of months and put them together and just add them up. Don't even worry about the cents. Just sort of round off and figure out how much you have in sort of normal bills and how much do they fluctuate from period to period. And then do the same thing with your income and just see how that looks, if it looks like you're making ends meet or not. You know, other people benefit from actually tracking all their spending. And so, you know, this is good if you find that you're spending a lot of money, but you're not really paying attention. So the coffees, the lunches, the, you know, all those little things over the course of the day start to add up. So that can be useful. Those are really useful for younger people who are maybe not as accustomed to tracking their expenses.
Last time we talked to you, we focused a lot on savings and lack thereof for a lot of people, for even an emergency in a three-digit range, $300, $400. Surveys find a lot of people aren't ready for that. So whatever people's goals are, it seems like savings are probably part of it. What can people do to get started?
And savings are always part of the conversation. I think it's harder when we talk to people about retirement savings, because if you're, you know, especially if you're under 30, that's too far off to begin to think about. But what you just mentioned, emergency savings or saving for a contingency, that's really critical. That's the car repair or, you know, maybe the opportunity that you can take advantage of to maybe get a promotion at work, but you have to spend a little bit of money to get there. We're talking on average, you know, $400, $500 that you could just have in a liquid savings account. You know, a lot of analysts would suggest, you know, it's a month or two of your income that you might want to have put aside. But the whole point is to have a shock absorber in case something goes wrong and not having to borrow when another negative event might happen.
Let's lay out a scenario here that probably a lot of people have gone through. They've gotten motivated. They want to do it. They've got the stack of bills. And then they fling their hands up in the air. It's too much. It's overwhelming emotionally, mathematically, whatever. How do people know when to seek help? What kind of help is out there, especially maybe for a low-income person who can't afford to pay for that kind of help?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it is important to know when to get help and then how to get help, because unfortunately in the financial space, a lot of the people who are providing help are not there to actually provide help. They're there to help themselves. And so there's a lot of scams in this area. We saw it with the foreclosure crisis, where there were people who were really taking advantage of borrowers who are desperate to save their homes. And so it's important to be really cautious. You know, there's a website called debtadvice.org where these are certified credit counselors. And so they can walk through credit issues with you, even pulling up your credit report and try to figure out what some solutions might be, including maybe negotiating different kinds of deals. So there are good sources out there of nonprofit free financial counseling and credit counseling that can help people when the time comes.
Now, there are limits to the benefits of financial literacy. We've talked about that when we talked about your book and with some other guests. Are there things, I guess, institutional changes, either at the government level, the banking level, things like that, that would make it easier for people to be able to get a grasp on their finances, start saving, things like that?
Yeah. You know, the one that we come to frequently is schools. You know, there are a handful of schools that, when I was a kid, that taught financial education at all. If you talk to people who grew up, in the 50s, they all talk about learning about financial education in schools, even having banks in schools, and sort of some of that's starting to come back. But it really starts with education in schools. I did a study with some colleagues recently where we looked at several states that required high school students to take a financial education class before they could graduate, and they tested them on it. Those students 3 years later had higher credit scores and fewer delinquencies. So we do think there's some real value of school-based education, and it really doesn't have to be in high school. It can start as young as, you know, reading books about money. You know, Curious George has a lemonade stand, those kinds of books at young ages. And so schools are part of it. It's interesting, though, when I mentioned that in Wisconsin, people have higher financial education. And so one of the survey questions is, where did you learn it? most people in Wisconsin said from their family. So it is about schools. It is sometimes about employers, but it really is a multiple sources that people learn.
How would you recommend a parent have that conversation with a kid? It's probably, I guess, age appropriate as they get older, but what kind of things can parents do to instill that?
Yeah, and you know, I think the other thing is a lot of parents are just nervous about that conversation at all, and so they avoid it. And you know, having that conversation is important, and just including your kids in that conversation. Reading books is a great way to go, you know, for younger kids, but for older kids, it's, you know, it's understanding we have a mortgage or we have to do our taxes now and what that means.
Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I appreciate your time.
That's J. Michael Collins, Associate Professor of Public Affairs and Consumer Science at the UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about a new survey on financial literacy.